Welcome back to the Vikings Collective, episode 5. I'm Alec Lewis, The Athletic, here with Matthew Collar and Garrett Greenlee. Fun show for you guys. Welcome back to the Vikings Collective. Whoever does the production team at HMA is just spectacular because that intro always gets me very hyped up. As we said in the open, I'm Alec Lewis of The Athletic, here with Matthew Collar from Purple Insider and Garrett Greenlee of Football Analysis, here on episode 5. We've made it to 5 of the Vikings Collective, which is exciting. We've also made it to the end of training camp practices. Today was the final one out at the TCO Performance Center, and the Vikings will play Friday night in the final preseason game, and then roster cutdown is Sunday. Holy cow, this went by fast or slow, depending on your perspective and probably depending on each individual day. I'll toss it to you, Collar, from the outset, right? But, you know, we'll talk about quarterbacks. I promise here on the Vikings Collective, we will talk quarterbacks. But, Collar, has this gone fast or has it been slow or is it, you know, how do you feel about this training camp 2026?
Well, first, I do want to congratulate Garrett Greenlee on reaching 250,000 subscribers on his own channel. Of us can only dream of that number of subscribers. So congratulations, buddy. I'll say that I thought that it went fast and slow. And there was once upon a time a quarterback who said to us at a podium that, you know, the days are long, but the years are fast. And I kind of felt that way about this training camp. Like there are long days and I've got some sunburns to prove it. I'm sure that you do too, of standing out there charting throw after throw after throw after throw. And you're like, when is this thing going to end? But now that we're here and the regular season feels pretty close, I'm like, oh yeah. Remember training camp 2026, like the quarterback competition, all the times we had. So one thing is, though, that now that everything is sort of settled, I've just been doing my vibe check podcast and getting ready for that at the end of camp. I think that things went overall for the Minnesota Vikings about as well as they possibly could have from a health perspective, from a player development perspective, and even for how Kyler Murray looked as the quarterback of this team. I know that 98% of the conversation has been about another guy, but the actual starting quarterback of this football team had a pretty sound overall training camp. So you walk away thinking there actually wasn't a lot of drama to this thing, where when you look at other cities, there have been other teams that are dealing with all sorts of different prostitution cases or injuries or whatever it might be. And we're kind of sitting here like, okay, well, Ty Ingram Dawkins looks good. And that's been one of our main storylines.
Yeah. I mean, 98% of this show will not be about JJ McCarthy, but we'll hit a fair amount of number here shortly. Garrett, before we get to that subject and the backup quarterback situation, just what has it been like to follow this Vikings training camp from afar? Because we're so in it. Collar and I, there every single day, watching every throw, talking to people after practices. It's just kind of this, like, I don't know, you feel like there's this propulsion thrust throughout this training camp. But watching from afar, how would you describe what it's been like?
I think the best way to describe from afar was what Collar said, where the days are long, the you know, the weeks are short. Where first week, I'm looking forward to, all right, who had the best day of practice, you know? And then we found out that the starting quarterback was Kyler, which was going to be the case from the start. Everybody thought that from the start, reasonably thought that from the start. And then since then, it's just been kind of, oh, cool. Jacob Thomas makes another play. He makes, guess what, another play. And he has, I think, the highest grade out of any, the PFF grade out of any rookie in the 2026 preseason. And aside from a couple, you know, discussions here about Caleb Banks and the Dominique Orange pass breakup last week, it's been pretty quiet. It's been, I would say, no news is good news in that regard, because the NFC South has been hit with a lot of injuries so far going around for all four teams, and knock on wood, thankfully we haven't, and very grateful to be able to say that.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. You mentioned Caleb Banks, Dominique Orange. I'm thinking, like, so much of the conversation on the quarterbacks prevents the Christian Darrisaw health probably deep dive. It prevents the Dallas Turner and how he looked in joint practices deep dive. You mentioned Jacob Thomas, some of the undrafted rookies who we'll talk about a little bit later in this show. Like the attention being paid to the quarterback spot, I think sometimes can, you know, it has probably shifted focus. Now, I say all of that, and here we go, head first, diving back into the backup quarterback conversation. Now, I will say a couple things. First and foremost, I do think talking about the quarterbacks is relevant. Why? Because it's the most important position in the game. And B, the number two component of it is Kyler Murray has missed games in three of his last four seasons to a point at which talking about who could potentially fill in for him in a short-term basis to me is relevant. I also think when you draft a player as high as you've ever drafted a quarterback within the organization, talking about him probably comprehensively makes sense. So I'll probably start with you, Collar, and just where you think this backup quarterback, position is. I'll just start before I do that, Collar, with JJ McCarthy came out of Saturday's game, banged up was the verbiage that Kevin O'Connell used. JJ McCarthy said he was okay afterwards. Then he practiced Monday and Tuesday on kind of a full basis, but I mean, he took reps with the second team. Then Kevin O'Connell at the podium today says that he's not going to practice today. They're going to give him a day, but they hope that he can start for reps purposes and developmental purposes Friday. So it's kind of been a helter-skelter, back-and-forth circumstance for seemingly the 10th time of JJ McCarthy's young NFL career. And so, Collar, what do you make of what we heard today from Kevin O'Connell? And then by extension to that, like, how are you thinking about this backup quarterback situation as a whole?
Yeah, so I certainly wonder if the words "start the third preseason game" maybe caused some additional swelling on the ankle. You know how that can happen. Like your emotional reaction maybe causes you to not be able to play all of a sudden. I'm not saying that he's not banged up. I'm sure that he is, but I also doubt that JJ McCarthy wants to play in the third preseason game. And the fact that O'Connell was willing to come out and tell us that I thought was curious, because a lot of times he doesn't tell us what they're going to do with the preseason games, who's going to start, who's going to play and things like that. But he kind of wanted the world to know, yeah, I'd like JJ McCarthy to play. And I think that the accumulation of hits that he's taken, at some point you have to say this is partly about how he plays. Is if you're going to hang onto the ball forever, if you're going to hang in the pocket, if you're going to try to make plays sometimes when they're not there, then the injuries are going to accumulate. And I don't know how you could think about playing JJ McCarthy for an extended period of time as the backup quarterback and not think he's probably going to get injured again. And this is in comparison to a guy, Carson Wentz, who got injured almost immediately after starting last year. So my conclusion is, there's a Tom Moore saying that everybody knows about, which is when he was asked why they don't play Peyton Manning's backups in practice. He said, because we don't practice bleeped. And I guess what my stance is going to be on the show and on my show is we don't talk about bleeped. Like, if Kyler Murray goes down, this team is in a lot of trouble at the quarterback position. I don't honestly care who's the quarterback. I think that you could run things better with Carson Wentz. We know that. We saw that last year. I also know that Carson Wentz went 2-3 and by the end was dragging himself off the field with his shoulder hanging off. And with JJ McCarthy, we're talking about four injuries last year that caused him to miss time. Another injury, throwing 17 preseason passes. I mean, who could you trust to go in there for the rest of the season if Kyler has issues? The answer is neither one of these guys. And I think Wentz has a better chance to win football games than JJ McCarthy does based on their preseason performance and what we've seen in camp. But I will also say that I'm just, once this is over, once this conversation is over and whatever they do with JJ gets resolved, like, we don't need to talk about it anymore. We don't need the McCarthy investigation, the McCarthy files and everything else. We don't need to rehash every single other day. Who was it that really drafted JJ McCarthy? It doesn't matter. Like, Kyler Murray is the starting quarterback of this team and they have potential to reach the playoffs and be a dangerous team. So that is where the focus should start to shift for us.
Garrett, I could go a lot of ways off of that to toss to you. I'll start, before we talk about probably future, next couple of days in future, I do want, like, what did you think of hearing Kevin O'Connell speak the way he did about JJ and the injury and then Friday night? Like, what was going through your mind as you heard that?
So I think O'Connell, once, I mean, he's in year five as head coach, and obviously we all listen to KOC pressers. You guys attend KOC pressers, and you guys know how he speaks, like, more. And, you know, as Vikings fans, you can, and as fans of a team, you know how your coaches speak and kind of what they mean. You can read between the lines. O'Connell, there's times where he says 1,000 words without saying anything, right? And then there's times like this where there's a definitive statement. And it's hard to disagree with Collar with what is being said, because wherever you stand on JJ, whether you still think there's something, whether you don't think there's anything, whether you're fed up and entirely done with it, I don't think that you could definitively say that JJ getting more reps is a bad thing, no matter where you stand. I don't think that part should be controversial. So the fact that O'Connell's coming out saying it multiple days before the game that he would like him to play, it's a tough look, because Collar said 17 passes in the preseason coming off all the injuries that he had last year. Obviously the meniscus in 2024, it's all the way around unfortunate.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, it was interesting for me being in the press box Saturday watching that game, because, like, on one hand, Henry Bird is playing, like, left tackle, which is not a position that Henry Bird, a lower-level roster player for the Minnesota Vikings, has really ever played in a meaningful game. So the fact that Mike Green, who had first-round talent, was making, turnstiling Henry Bird and making it hard for Jaden McCarthy, like, that wasn't that surprising to me, but it's also – it was difficult for me personally to square that situation with the fact, too, that JJ McCarthy still going through his reads, moving around in the pocket. There is extra movement. There are extra ticks that probably make it more likely that he puts himself in jeopardy from an injury perspective. And so, like, watching that game Saturday and then getting to the post game, where, again, Kevin O'Connell brings up that he got banged up. He would have liked to see him play another drive. That was interesting to me. Then JJ McCarthy, minutes later in the locker room, says, you know, it was a Kevin O'Connell decision. He wants to play as long as possible. Then he's on the practice field Monday. Then he's on the practice field Tuesday. Then today he's not present practicing on the practice field, but he's on the sidelines yucking it up with teammates. It's just a fascinating arc. And when I tacked that atop all of the moments last year of, you know, we don't find out about the concussion in Green Bay until the day after and it's reported on the plane. It's been so interesting, Collar, the fact that these injuries frequently, there's not this line of demarcation of, like, okay, he needs to be walked off the field. He needs to be carted off the field. There's always, like, another variable to them that has just covering it, just speaking very, like, openly and objectively. Like, it's just, I've never experienced that covering the league or even when I cover Major League Baseball. Maybe you have another example in your mind, Collar, of it, but that's been kind of an interesting layer to it all.
I mean, the hand thing last year, covering it with the towel, the taking himself out of a game, but not taking himself out of another game. And then this happens here. And I mean, I guess you wondered about whether, you know, O'Connell was kind of just putting it a little bit on blast with some of the statements, just sort of like, this is exasperating that every single time we put you out there, we're sort of dealing with something. And backup quarterbacks are historically, because now he is a backup quarterback, and historically what they are known for is not being exasperating. Like, the guys we covered, Nick Mullins,
reliability at all, at every turn.
Is there any more available player? Is there any more prepared player? Is there any more quiet player in the back of the locker room? You and I would go talk to him sometimes to learn about football, but he was not getting media scrums or bringing any attention to himself or anything else like that. And, you know, when he got banged up and got beat up in those games, he went out and played the next game. There wasn't a whole just song and dance that went along with every single injury. And I think you do, if you're a coach, you're like, I got to worry about the 53 guys that are going to be playing and determining whether we win or lose on game day, and not concerned constantly about the backup quarterback, which Wentz has been that guy since he got here. No complaints whatsoever about the lack of reps, just showing up, doing his job, and so forth. And, you know, the performance does matter too, because I was just pulling this up to look at completion percentages around the league in the preseason. Some of the names of guys who could complete 65% of their passes would kind of blow your mind. Kyle McCord, Ethan Joe Calliacanis, Bagnano. I mean, Cade Klubnik, like there, and the league leader, is he the league leader? He's close, very close. Your guy, Joe Fagnano. I mean, we are talking about, like, this is the easiest possible version of football in the entire universe. And there's two wide open receivers in the end zone that are missed on three quarter speed football. It's just, where is it that he has earned even the backup quarterback position? Because even though Wentz had a very bad practice today, I thought, and some of that's because he's playing the first team defense, but even though he had a tough practice, it's like, well, this guy's played in the league for 10 years. You figure he can just get himself ready and go run the team and give you a chance to win on Sunday and have it not be a circus. And every play is a circus sometimes, where it's just like, throw the ball. Is the ball going to get thrown? Or, hey, if I'm KOC and I draw up a little flat route and Miles Price is so wide open that Garrett Greenlee could hit him and you overthrow him, it's like, what can you trust him to do? You can't trust him to be available. You can't trust him to play on time. You can't trust him to throw accurately. You can't trust him to protect himself. It's like, usually backup quarterbacks are known for being trustworthy. So I think that it's probably time to just make Carson Wentz the backup. And if you need to see seven more throws in the third preseason game, just make Carson Wentz the backup.
Garrett, I want to take this and think forward for a second. So, I mean, you've made your, you know, opinions on JJ, and I think understandably they align with a lot of the fan base for a while of like wanting the hope of the young quarterback who could be the franchise guy that this team really has not had extensively in a long, long time, which is an understandable, I think, you know, perspective in psychology. So I lead you down the road of, to Collar's point, like my expectation right now, and this is just based on conversations, but also what I've seen is that Carson Wentz is definitely going to be the backup for this, for the Minnesota Vikings. And so that would then lead you down the road of JJ McCarthy as the number three quarterback. How okay is he going to be with that? I think that's a very valid question. If he's not okay with that, does that end up leading to a conversation about, you know, is this the end of the road? So, Garrett, part of me just wants you to, you know, give your thoughts on, like, what if it's at that place, how do you feel about that? How, what are your emotions going to be if it is the end of the road?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating just because, you know, you trade up for him, you want everything. I mean, naturally, as a fan, you want everything to work out. But there's also a part of it where you sit here, you replay everything, and over the past 2 years, not just the past 2 weeks, but the past 2 years, and you get to a point where it's just, it's always something. And it's so frustrating to sit back and watch everything unfold. And I still think, I mean, raw talent-wise, I don't think that, you know, what JJ did last year, you go on the road, you win down by double digits, first NFL game. And then, you know, a couple starts later, which was like 9 weeks later, because he got injured against the Lions. Two of your first three games are road wins against division opponents. That is impressive. There's no, you know, kind of denying that how with the end result, but then you just have everything that comes through within of how he got there. The sprained ankle against Atlanta, which he finished the game. And then there was a conversation of after the game of, well, he was playing on adrenaline and then he was out for 6 weeks. And then there was, even within the Chargers game last year, there was a clip where somebody was like running to the sideline and then they got tackled on the sideline. JJ, while being out with the sprained ankle, hurdles over the guys that were, you know, right there. So then there's that aspect. It just seems like there's always something. And I think there's a lot of similarities with just an off the field standpoint or, you know, a media / everything being loud with McCarthy, as there was last year and the past couple of years with the Dolphins and Tua. There's just always something. You're just waiting for kind of the shoe to fall. You're waiting for something to happen. And I think Saturday was kind of a microcosm of that. The first play, JJ throws a ball, you know, over a guy's head. And then the final throw that he actually had, it was dropped, and it was actually a good throw. It was actually a layered throw. I know that's been a whole conversation, but what overtook everything noise-wise? The throw to Miles Price in fourth down that should have been, you know, if you're an NFL quarterback, you have to make that. If you're a college quarterback, you have to make that throw. And then there's a whole discussion of, well, he had the guy in front of him jumping up to try and deflect the pass. So what? You move around, make the play. I mean, these you know, you're paid millions of dollars. Go make the play. I mean, if you have to step up, do you think Patrick Mahomes is making that excuse? It's frustrating, to be honest with you. It's you wanted everything to work out, but then you also realize this, if it does work out with McCarthy, which statistically it is a long shot at this point, it's not going to be here.
Kyler, you said something to the effect of, like, you don't think it's worth rehashing any of it. I wonder why you say that. Like, I guess if it's a rehashing of everything that's already been known, then perhaps that's a sensible kind of thought, especially 2 weeks before a season that is a critically important season for everybody internally. But I do wonder, like, why don't you think there's more questions to be, or why don't you think it's worth asking more questions about just the nature of how these 3 years have gone?
Because I think we have a pretty good feeling for what happened. Number one is missing your entire first year was more of a setback than I think any of us ever expected. Also, you know, when you're talking about taking second team reps now and then in 2024 versus everything is on you, it's a very different situation. I think it was set up for him to look pretty good in that camp and he showed the flashes. But if he was performing the same way he did in this camp back as a rookie, we would have said, well, that looks pretty good, because we thought, well, he's a longer development project. Mm-hmm. But nothing has really changed through at any point. When he first came into his first mini camp, it was, well, we clearly see accuracy in throwing with touch as an issue. And we saw the slower processing and so forth. And it never really got faster. There were some moments in training camp practices. There were some exciting moments, as Garrett mentioned, but it always came along with, like, that, even the Detroit game, the best game, he threw for like 160 yards and he was doing somersaults and sacks and running out of bounds at the wrong time at the end of the game. And it's like, even when it goes well, it's sort of, well, you know, it went good against Washington, who fired their defensive coordinator, and he threw for 160 yards and that kind of thing. Like, and I know you're referring to the bigger type mm-hmm. of picture, but I think I have a great sense for what happened here. They drafted a player who has some really good tools, who was an absolute winner for his entire life. And that's what they made their bet on over the one other quarterback that they could have had, who was a finished product and was going to be like 25 years old. I get why they did it, but they rolled the dice and it came up snake eyes. And that's where we're at right now. And I think that you could investigate, well, whose fault is it? And we could put everybody on trial and everything else. But the reality is, you go through the history of this game, there are many 10 to 20th overall draft pick quarterbacks who just don't have enough touch, don't have enough feel for the quickness of the game, can't master an offense, have injury issues, and, you know, maybe just don't really know how to handle the pressure of the National Football League. I was telling Garrett before we went on that I covered EJ Manuel. It's almost the exact same arc. Like, there were moments and the guy had tools, but it just never really came together, and the team was trying to win, so they moved on pretty quickly. And I feel like that's where we're at. I know that people want to make it into, like, did O'Connell mess something up? Was it Kwesi? Who did this? Who's to blame? But it's like, sometimes guys just aren't good enough to be NFL starters. It happens a lot. Blaine Gabbert was a backup for like 15 years or whatever. It's just how it goes. So I feel like I have a really good understanding of what happened, and I don't need the McCarthy trials. I don't need to know who pushed the big red button or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think on one hand, like, this arc in the last 3 years, there are lessons to be learned from, if you're other organizations, if you're other teams, I like, from the development standpoint, from all of it. But I do, what you're saying is, in some ways I can get behind it. It's like, but it, you juxtapose this specific dynamic, and to try to rationalize certain bits and pieces of it is a, I think it's just like what our brains do to try to make something that is more probabilistic than we're probably giving credit for, like, makes sense. Like, I mean, I think it's understandable on in both prongs. So,
look, yeah, real quick, yeah. Alec, I think the only reason it's interesting is that what goes along with it is one of the worst front office moves in the history of the National Football League, letting go Sam Darnold to have him go win the Super Bowl, to turn it over to someone who's having to fight for his life to be backup quarterback in the third preseason game of his third season. That's why it's interesting. Otherwise, it's actually fairly common. And just the fact that it's been a circus act, like, from day one. But I think otherwise, like, it is historically pretty common. It's just that the way it's gone down, as Garrett has mentioned it, it's been like one headline after the next for the entire time. He's been what we thought that Shedeur Sanders would be, like a walking headline.
Yeah, I agree with you in some sense, but I also think, like, you know, the evaluation of these guys, what's caught in that process, what's not caught in that process. I think there's lessons to be learned there. I think there's, you know, how the media plays a role in trying to bring along a young quarterback in this era of the NFL. I can think there's some lessons to kind of be gleaned from there. So it's, I don't know. I see it a lot of ways, but I understand the perspective,
Colin. Well, what would that be though? Like what was supposed to be done differently?
Well, I think I'm not sure if it's necessarily should be done differently. I just think the layers of what was kind of garnered in the evaluation of JJ McCarthy, what wasn't, the layers of, you know, schematic I think there are avenues to go down that might provide some revelation that matters in the grand scheme of like developing quarterbacks in the future. But I also think to your point earlier, like this is a singular situation. The environment is singular. The surroundings are singular. JJ McCarthy as a player in person is singular. So to try to squeeze juice out of the orange of what this is for the future, I think it can be a little bit of a dicey proposition. Garrett, have any thoughts on that? And then I promise we will talk about the rest of this roster that is essential to talk about considering this team has expectations for 2026.
No, we went last week without talking about the quarterback situation. So we had to start it out with an extended talk this week. No, I mean, it's just the biggest thing that I go back to with the JJ McCarthy era as it appears to be in the last legs, whether he gets traded in a couple of days, whether he's traded at, you know, this offseason or maybe even released next year, whatever the case may be. It just seemed like it was always something, and that was the part that was most frustrating, where it couldn't have been a normal situation at all. It was peak Vikings. It was peak, like, hey, we have a good year, and then, oh, by the way, Super Bowl the next year, and then we're, you know, getting clowned every week for one way or another, and then we missed the playoffs on top of it, and it was just always something one way or another.
Yeah. And I think, like, Collard, to go back to the Sam comment, because I think it's a fun conversation. It's really interesting. And I imagine internally, like, they've had these backs and forths in some capacity as well. So I think that's why it's relevant to do this on the Vikings collective. But I think there's like lessons to be learned there of when you have somebody who performs at a certain, you know, benchmark level at the NFL, you know, in the NFL, like, the, how much can you really take that for granted, regardless of the emotions of how it ends or the narratives kind of leading into the season? So for me, like, that's where I think my mind is of like, what can you glean moving forward, you know, if you're the league writ large? I just think that's an interesting part of it.
Well, I mean, what we have seen in the National Football Conference is a lot of teams who have had quarterbacks that are not necessarily top five players in the league who have had a lot of success with the teams based on how they built it. And what usually happens is they draft really well. And so there is an entire conversation there that if Sam Darnold played the way he did with a bunch of draft picks and you had a lot of cap space and so forth, then you might've been a lot more willing to just franchise tag him and say, whatever, like $41 million is fine, because we have all these draft picks who hit, right? So there are multiple layers to kind of how we got to this point. 100%. But I think that the other lesson also might be is you should never believe in yourself too much, because I think that that's one of the things that happened was they believed in their development system. They believed in their receivers. They believed in their offensive line acquisitions and so forth. And they forgot about the, you know, a little bit of the chaos theory. And they also forgot that you never know how someone's going to actually play football until they walk onto that field. And when JJ McCarthy walked onto that field for the first three quarters, it was like, okay. And then, as you know, Garrett mentioned, there were moments along the way that you thought that it might be turning around. But I think that when you start to kind of believe that, hey, like, we're the reason, I can coach him up, I can fix this, I can fix that, if they go down this road again, that may be something to really strongly keep in your mind. The other thing too is that you shouldn't, and this goes for Kyler, this should be the lesson for Kyler, which is you should not let how it ends determine whether you're going to keep that player or not. Because you know how many teams it ends badly for? 31. So 31 folks go home very displeased. It's kind of like the Will Campbell thing. It was like everyone thought that Will Campbell is the worst player of all time because he had a bad Super Bowl. We always remember that so much. And I think that that stuck with them. What happened with Darnold, when, again, sort of looking at the history, many Super Bowl winning quarterbacks had bad starts to their playoff careers and ended up turning it around.
See, this is why I wanted to revisit it a little bit, because I think we learned some stuff. I think we talk it through. Collars, you surprised yourself. There are lessons within it that I feel like are worth eyeing. All right, 30 minutes. That's what we're going to do, the palate cleanser here right now, and talk about Prize Picks. And then I mean, it's going to be Vikings roster central when we come back. And I cannot wait to talk about some of these position battles and how the final 53 is going to shake out. But first, I want to talk about Prize Picks. New users, as you can see on the screen, can play for $5 and get $150 if you win when you use code HMA. Right now, you are looking at a Prize Picks lineup. You can really create any lineup you want. It's pretty exciting to go through there. There's a lot you can find. Right now, I'm looking at Max Crosby's season tackles total, 72.5. Aluakon, I'm not going to try to say his first name, 130.5 tackles. Who else we got? Danielle Hunter. I saw a picture of Danielle Hunter today, and I'm thinking, like, man, does that guy ever get enough credit for how good of an NFL player he's been? Blake Cashman has had a hell of a training camp, Collar, and we probably should talk a little bit more about that and not the quarterbacks. But is there any player for you guys on the screen here, whether it's Zach Bond, Cedric Gray, Nick Bolton, MIZ, Go Tigers? Is there any of these guys that's standing out to you from a tackles perspective that you'd have your eye on?
I mean, I see Justin Jefferson on the screen for the 100-yard games. So that's where I was leaning, because he had 300-yard games last year. And if he had three last year, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it does not get worse than that this year. So assuming he stays healthy for even half the year, I'd go way over. For tackles, to answer your question directly, rather than avoid it entirely.
Thank you.
Cedric Gray, I think that there's a chance he's a second-team All-Pro player this year.
Wow.
I love Cedric Gray. Robert Saleh's his head coach now. And the linebacking position across the league, I think, is a little thin. And it's kind of like Fred Warner and the rest of everybody else. So that second-team All-Pro is kind of up for grabs. Wouldn't be surprised if Cedric Gray is a second-team All-Pro player. He had over, I want to say, 170 tackles last year. So I'm a big Cedric Gray guy.
Collar, you got a guy there? Aluakon?
Well, I have been very, very impressed with Blake Cashman, as I always am. Injuries can always be a thing, because the guy plays with his hair on fire every single game. And so you never know, like, is he going to get banged up? But he's had about as good of a camp, and the D-line has had a really good camp. So that always
Jalen Redmond. How about Jalen Redmond today? I mean, he's just living in the backfield. Beast. He actually set up a tent in the backfield during practice. It was crazy.
He has been a beast throughout this training camp. So I think that the D-line actually playing as well as they have would open me up to, you know, potentially go with some overs with Blake Cashman.
All right. I like those picks, guys. Cedric Gray. I'm going to have to rip some Cedric Gray tape here shortly, Garrett, because I haven't watched a lot of them. But that's Prize Picks. You can find a lineup and some really fun stuff to sift through. I see Jack Fox up there. I don't know why he's in the mix with the tackles and all that stuff. But Prize Picks, new users can play for $5, get $150 if you win when you use code HMA. All right. So quarterback stuff. I'm going to put that in the cubby over there. We're going to talk about this 53-man roster, because cutdown has to happen by Sunday at 3 o'clock. Pretty crazy. Kevin O'Connell said this. I didn't really think about it. They're going to get back at 4 a.m. on Sunday morning from the maybe Saturday morning, after the preseason game, the final one. So they got about, you know, it's 36 hours to meet with it, pretty much everybody on the roster, and finalize things, which is pretty interesting. Let's go here. Guys, with kind of an opinion on which is the spot of the roster positionally that you have the hardest time with kind of identifying who should be on the cut line there. And I guess because I'm tossing it out to you guys and we didn't prepare for it, I'll go first. I've had a really hard time with tight end number three, because Ben Jurasik has contributed on special teams. He also played a little bit offensively last year and contributed as a blocker, while Gavin Bartholomew, former sixth-round pick who missed all of last season with a back injury, has had a pretty good camp. I'd say it's been a little more quiet the last week and a half than it was the first a couple weeks of camp, but his twitch as a pass catcher has stood out to me. So I don't really think they'll take four tight ends. Maybe it's possible, but if you have to choose between one of those two guys, like I can see a world in which both really make sense. So before you guys give your opinions, you have any thoughts on that tight end number three spot, Collar?
I think that Bartholomew makes a lot of sense because Urosik is probably a guy that you can get to the practice squad. And I think like pass catchers are hard to come by. Also, we see development projects work out and we don't know what the future is going to be at tight end. And if Bartholomew proves that he can step in for TJ Hockenson, if there's any injury, or to Josh Oliver, that could mean a lot toward their decision of what to do at tight end for next year. The issue that I had building a 53 was defensive tackle, where it was like keep six, keep seven. Isaiah Loudermilk, they gave him a nickname. I know it's just Milk, but usually if they give somebody a nickname, they stick around. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, he's been playing a lot with the second unit, but Elijah Williams, in my opinion, has to stay. He has been absolutely terrific in these preseason games. So I struggled a little bit there. Around the edges of like corner, you know, safety, do you keep Tavier Thomas? Like, those were kind of the decisions I struggled with. I could not figure out, maybe Garrett's got one that I don't have. I couldn't figure out if there was a surprise cutter trade anywhere on the roster. I couldn't come up with anybody.
Well, first, let's stick on defensive line for a second. So you said you have six, and we're in the weeds here, but this is the Vikings Collective where we are collectively diving into the weeds. That's just kind of how it's going to be. Jalen Redmond is one. Levi Drake Rodriguez is two. Elijah Williams, as you said, is definitely included. That's three. Who else you got? You got Caleb Banks, of course. You've got Dominique Orange. That's five. Are you including Ty Ingram Dawkins within the six?
Yes.
Okay. So that's
because he's been starting at 3-4 defensive end.
Yes, that's correct. And so that's interesting. Like, I think I had six and I left off Loudermilk, but if you do that, it's a pretty young room. And you're relying then a lot on Ryan Nielsen as your new defensive line coach, who is a really respected teacher, and then Pat Hill, who is the assistant D-line coach, has been around. But, Garrett, I mean, how do you feel about that young of a defensive line room for a defense that quietly, like, they've stopped the run so well, and it's an important aspect of the defense to be able to probably do what they want to do from a pressure standpoint. So how do you feel about those six?
I think those six are going to make it. And I think that Loudermilk's on the bubble, on the outside looking in. So that's kind of where I would lean with the six for the defensive line. Regarding the run defensive situation, there was almost inevitably going to be a step back. I feel like with that young of a room, and especially with multiple rookies in Banks and Orange, and especially with the questions about Caleb Banks' pad level and how that's going to be something that comes out throughout the entire 2026 season. So if you, are not sick of the Caleb Banks conversation yet, it's going to be a long year for you then, because it's going to be happening every week. But that's one thing where I expect there to be a bit of a transition period. There may, I don't want to say there's going to be a 200-yard rushing game like the Falcons had last year, but there's probably going to be a game here or there earlier in the year where we may get gashed once or twice. But then kind of a flow does his magic, if you will, throughout the course of the season. There's kind of a regression to what we should expect from this defense. But I will say, even with the idea of Isaiah Loudermilk not making the roster, I want to be clear. I don't think Isaiah Loudermilk, kind of being a veteran in the room, that he's going to be the voice of reason that we're going to go from like the potential 18th rushing defense in the first 4 weeks of the year to the second, because, you know, Isaiah Loudermilk is going to really teach Caleb Banks how to use his hands the right way, or some motivational football thing like that. Right. So I would like to think that those six are going to be the guys on the roster.
And I will say too, like, you know, from a run defense perspective, and again, like, this isn't going to be, it's only going to be talked about. I always feel this way with run defense. Like, you're only talking about it if you're struggling stopping the run. If you're stopping the run extremely well, no one really talks about it. You just kind of cross your fingers that it keeps showing up. But I do think it places a lot of responsibility on Levi Drake Rodriguez if he's the starting nose tackle, and potentially Dominique Orange if he transitions a little bit to becoming that. But like, there is a big responsibility on guys like that to really hold up. And then I also think there's responsibility on, let's say it's Jay Ward playing near the line of scrimmage. Like, can he fill gaps correctly? Can they when they get creative and use some of their, like, you know, early down blitz stunts type usage, like, can they be assignment sound? I do think that's an element of this team that, again, won't be discussed unless it's a problem and then needs to be discussed. Collar, what do you think about that?
I think that run defense is a social construct, or really it's a construct of how the rest of the game goes. Because what we saw last year was the Vikings, under certain circumstances, were able to stop the run. But where they couldn't stop the run is when they were getting blasted on offense and were using all of Ryan Wright's leg strength time and time again to, you know, hoof the ball all the way down inside the other 20 and then allow Bijan Robinson to get handoff after handoff after handoff, or the Kenny Gainwell game. Like
Kamani Vidal.
I mean, right. Like, but why is that happening? I don't think it was happening because they were incapable. I think it was happening because their defense was getting so worn down by always being on the field and always being in situations where it was favorable to run the football. I mean, even when you look at their overall, like, EPA per run allowed, we'd probably all say, yeah, didn't have a great run defense last year. When you look at the numbers, you're like, but it says they had a good run defense. Well, because teams were fine with running in negative, EPA type of scenarios, because why would they not? I mean, the game against the Green Bay Packers, Jordan Love could have won that game throwing zero passes. So when you put pressure on the opponent to have to throw a lot, that's where Brian Flores' defense really comes alive. Can you survive the run and create havoc with the pass? And of course, yeah, I mean, you don't want to be giving up first quarter 6 yards per attempt or whatever else. But I think we even saw this with an offense like, or a defense like the Bills last year, who got gashed in the run game and they finished like 12th. And why did they finish 12th? Well, because teams were still chasing them because they have Josh Allen and you don't. And that you couldn't just hand off. So I think that the Vikings run game, the Kyler Murray, like, high completion percentage type of offense,
sure,
moving the ball, hanging on to the ball, getting ahead in games early, forcing teams to play behind, I think that will adjust your success in the run game as much as even the personnel.
Yeah, and I think that was a similar formula to 2024, where it was, you know, so many early leads generated. And this was a formula that the Seahawks used with Sam Darnold last year, too. It was so many early leads generated to where then you do kind of hold the pin, as these coaches tend to say. But I will say, just, you know, I do think injuries played a role in the run defense too at those points. You know, Andrew Van Ginkel missed time, Blake Cashman missed time. And so for me, there is a responsibility or there is a attentiveness for me of just, like, is the health to a level that allows you to rise to a certain bar? Garrett, from a position standpoint, I talked about tight end. Collar went deep on the defensive line. Is there any, you know, any spot where you're like, what do we do there? Like, how, you know, who do you keep? Who do you, you know, who might be on the chopping block? And then we'll get to some surprise cuts. But where do you have your eyes, Garrett?
My eyes are on the running back room. Do we keep three or four? The, you know, which are we keeping? Claiborne? Are we keeping Xavier Scott? We keep them both. That's going to be the big one for me, because Aaron Jones is in year 10. Jordan Mason, he was fine last year, and obviously those guys are both fine, but, you know, which player or both are we going to keep after those two? That's to me one of the bigger questions for the final 53.
I'd be pretty floored, Collar, if DeMond Claiborne isn't on the roster, just based upon the juice and explosiveness and how much they've used him in the preseason. It's not to say he's a perfect player. It's not to say he doesn't, from a ball security standpoint, have leaps to make, from a schematic understanding, have leaps to make and all of that. But I just, every time I'm out there watching him, there is just a different gear to that guy that I just don't think you'd expose. And I think it's validated what they thought from a draft perspective. Do you think I'm wrong with that?
No, I don't. And I also think that, you know, they've really liked Xavier Scott from sort of a shoulder pads up. He's got toughness to him. He could really catch the football. He's got size. I don't think he's going to average 5 yards carry.
He can play chess.
Run game is ridiculous. Yes, he can play chess. Unless this run game is unbelievable with Frank Smith at the helm. But, you know, I think that he's as solid and reliable and special teams and all that sort of stuff. But I guess I would swing it back with Garrett with another question, which would be, is there someone that you think would be available for the Vikings to get as an RB3? Because, you know, when we're talking about backup quarterbacks and we're talking about, you know, kind of you're screwed or whatever, if you have to get there, How many RB3s in the NFL are you like, oh man, I would love if that guy was playing all 17 games. Like, there can't be very many, right?
The only one that I am like adamant about, I still wouldn't give up on, is Trey Benson from the 24 draft class. He's been on the Cardinals and he's been banged up. He was released. Actually, all 32 teams passed on him. So he's back in like the Cardinals practice squad. But I think his skill set's too similar to Jordan Mason's, to the point where I'd actually just rather keep Demond Claiborne and Xavier Scott than I would to go bring him in specifically. But aside from that one clear outlier, then the answer is no, and I agree with you.
It's actually interesting, Kyler, because today at practice, Jordan Mason, you saw it, Kyler, but he got dinged up with his ankle. And that thought did cross my mind of like, what if it's Aaron Jones and Demond Claiborne? Like, does that, you know, can you survive with that? You know, and I think potentially you can, but it did cross my mind. I think about the three running back, like the Chargers right now feel like they have a pretty good stable of Omarion Hampton, the high-end traits guy. Kamani Vidal has shown some stuff in games, and then Keaton Mitchell's kind of like your explosive type. And that feels like the best possible maybe package. But I would say this, Kyler. You mentioned Xavier Scott. Like, he's one of those guys as I'm putting together the 53 where it's like, okay, you know, where do I lie with Xavier Scott? Could you get him to the practice squad? You know, would you value his special teams potential to a point where he is on the roster? And I would put another guy like Tavier Thomas in a similar bucket like that. Tavier Thomas has been a gunner for this team. He's a safety, but he hasn't played a lot of defensive snaps. So really it's a question for me of like, does this new regime in the front office and Nolan Teasley, Trent Kirshner, Andrew Healy, like how much do those guys value that special team skill set? And would that potentially shift how this roster is kind of organized? Kyler, what do you think about those names or anybody in that bucket that I didn't mention?
The hard part is to figure out how Matt Daniels views those special teams guys. Yeah. Like, do you think I have to have a leader in Tavier Thomas or we're in like a lot of trouble? Or do you think, well, you know, Jacob Thomas could be that guy or somebody else can be that guy because I've brought him along and developed him and they have some draft picks that are going to contribute to special teams on a week to week basis. It's hard to put yourself in that shoes. That's why I've never gone 53 for 53, because if like Jacob Roberts is a guy who plays very physically, he's made a couple plays out there and like he's played all the special teams in these first two games. Could he be somebody that they're looking at to include an extra linebacker? And I think that stuff matters a lot more to them behind the scenes of making that last cut than it does to maybe, you know, the public at large. But I do think that Xavier Scott is sort of a more you can do guy. Like, he could play every unit of special teams. He could fill in for a game and be prepared and ready. He caught 14 passes last year, including a toe tapper in the back of the end zone. It's like, I think that when you get past
Crow Park,
right? Yes. If you get past the first two levels, it's who do we trust? Because what are the odds that any of these guys is going to just come into the game and be like, oh, we found the game changer. It's like, no, can I get you out there for special teams or in a pinch? But it is a little concerning with both running backs of Mason's never been the all around number one guy and Aaron Jones with the injury history and even the smallest little nick or cut to somebody's ankle. You're like, what's this going to look like on game day if Aaron Jones has to run 26 times or something?
Garrett, what's your perspective on like keeping a special teams like centric type of guy like a Tavier Thomas?
So while Kyler was talking about the special teams part, my head actually went somewhere where I was thinking about, you know, how do we, and I don't know what specific position this is, but CJ Ham last year, like who's going to step up and do what he did on special teams? Because CJ was like in communication with everybody. And he was kind of, when you're looking at a punting unit, he was like the second to last guy, like on the left. I don't know, like the special teams exact terminology, full transparency, but is that something Xavier Scott could step up and do? Because Xavier Scott body wise is not far off from CJ Ham. Demond Claiborne is not going to be that guy. Demond Claiborne's not going to stop a 240-pound guy running straight at him before, you know, to get to the punter, right? But Xavier Scott can. So is he going to be that guy? Then I know it's talked, you know, it's joked around about high IQ players and lunch pail guys and everything like that, but CJ Ham was that type of player. Is Max Bredesen going to be that guy in the special teams? I kind of think Bredesen's almost too big for that specific role, because Bredesen and CJ Ham, despite being the same player or same position, rather, their body types are vastly different. And that's one question I go back to, where who is actually going to, that's kind of a question regarding the Vikings, is who is actually going to step up and do the CJ Ham role on special teams? And I mean, a couple of years ago, he also blocked a punt. I mean, you know how athletic you got to be to be able to run through the gap in the special
teams? I don't, certainly myself.
But I don't either. But to be able to, you know, get through the gap and block a punt, I mean, who is going to step up and be that person? And is that an offensive player? Is that a defensive player? So there's more, I would say, underlying questions regarding special teams. And I, again, full transparency, I don't know who's going to step up and be that guy.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I do think special teams could, you know, it's an essential piece of the team that we, again, similar to run defense. I just don't think it gets talked about enough. Before we get to the tweets, and that's how we end every Vikings Collective show, as you guys, the avid listeners, obviously know, I want to do 3 minutes on Mr. Mankato. I think it's pretty clear at this point, right? I mean, doesn't it have to be Jacob Thomas? Yep. The UDFA from James Madison. I mean, what a story this guy is. And it's really interesting. Like, I've thrown his name and what he's done to some people throughout the league, and they're like, well, a couple people have said, well, he went to James Madison. Like, that doesn't really work for me because they were in the college football playoff. Then a couple people have been like, yeah, time, speed, just not really sure. Well, at his pro day at James Madison, because he wasn't invited to the combine, he ran a 4.44 40. So that's pretty damn good for a guy who lined up on the line of scrimmage in his previous defense, who played in the deep half in the defense before. He was a walk-on for Kurt Cignetti. I mean, the guy has just stepped in and had been very savvy from a communicative perspective. And if Theo Jackson is still injured, I mean, right now he's the next guy up to play one of those deep safety spots. So is there anyone competing with him? And Kyler, I'll just say, like, how impressed have you been by what this guy's been able to do?
I'll just say some of us knew. Some of us knew early with Jacob Thomas. But, I mean, there was, I thought, signs kind of early on of the movement skill, the athleticism, his leaping ability, and, like, how natural of a mover he was. But I would have never guessed he would have been taking first-team reps when they do their scrimmage at the end of the year. He was kind of more of a, oh, this is interesting, let's keep an eye on him. And then, you know, he's just taken off and made plays. And it's a great story to see somebody get overlooked by the NFL, who just this year did not care about anybody that was not Power Four. And The Vikings took advantage of it, and they get Thomas as a UDFA. They get Charles Demings in the fifth round, who I think probably has the second best case. He just needed a play in a preseason game, and they never threw at him. And it's like, well, what are you supposed to do? But being the undrafted free agent is always going to put you to the front of the line. I think there's something legitimately there. Mm-hmm. I also wouldn't be that shocked if number 22 came walking through the doors and then we didn't hear as much about Jacob Thomas. But I truly believe that he's going to have a long career after seeing the way that he has acclimated himself to the NFL this quickly.
Probably wouldn't be tough to spend your first year learning from number 22, I would say, if you're Jacob Thomas. Garrett, there's no competitor for Jacob Thomas right now, is there, for that award?
No, it would just be if opposing quarterbacks wanted to throw at Charles Demings. I think there was like one play in the Ravens game. I think there was one play somebody ran a dig route where I think it was on Charles Demings. It might have been Jacoby Lane. But other than that, the best news you can have from a corner on game day is to not hear from them. You don't want to see them on the screen. You don't want to see them at all. Just let them go do what they do and just, you know, see them maybe like throw the strap symbol whenever they actually like make a play and that's it. So Jacob Thomas, by far the Mankato winner. I will say in 2015, the Vikings signed a safety out of Virginia, an undrafted free agent, Anthony Harris. He eventually became a good player and he led the league in interceptions in 2019. Not to say that it's going to have that type of path for Jacob Thomas, but he's off to a good start.
It's probably good that we were positive about Jacob Thomas because his dad is a special agent at the Pentagon. So you just never know. So I think it's a good job by us. All right, let's read some tweets and wrap it up for episode 5 of the Vikings Collective. Kyler, I'm going to put you on the spot. You're going first here.
So that means that he knows all of our tweets, Jacob Thomas, about him. So if you can, I don't know if you can see it, but there's a photo of me with the mannequin at TCL Performance Center with the Vikings' new rivalry uniforms. And I tweeted, got to look at the Vikings' rivalry uniform, and Justin Jefferson's mannequin was kind enough to let me pose for a photo. I got to say that photographs, they try their best, don't always do it justice. We saw it in person. And I think
I agree.
In person, you can really get the sense for like how sharp the gold is, the details on it. Maybe a little bit better than, oh, well, you're seeing this angle or that angle. But 3D, like I saw Aaron Jones holding the helmet, and it was like, that's a pretty good look. And I do like an homage to the darker, older purple. Well, it may look like the Ravens, there was another team who was there first with that darker purple, and that was the Minnesota Vikings. So I think they did a very good job, and they didn't go like totally outside the realm of like what your jersey should look like and your team identity and look like Coastal Carolina as the Jaguars did. So good job, Vikings, on your new jerseys.
I saw the helmet in person today, and I was like, wow. Gold, and it was the gold that kind of did it for me. It was just a nice little color. I'm not a color expert here, so I can't give you this specific tinge. But Garrett,
I thought you were.
I mean, most kind of probably do. Garrett, what did you think?
So I like the Nordic aspect. And I will say I saw KOC at the presser today. He was wearing – they have, like, actual, like, those jersey styles in – or not jersey styles, but you know what I'm trying to say, where they have, like, the apparel for those jerseys. And I think the apparel for those jerseys looks sharp. I thought KOC looked pretty good at the presser today.
That's good to hear. We'll let him know.
Good. Let him know.
All right. I'll give you my tweet. It is two words. It is from a football account at Gopher Football Elite Company. And it is a picture of Drake Lindsay. And beneath the graphic, it says 2026 Manning Award watch list. I am excited to watch Minnesota Golden Gophers football throughout the 2026 season, because I'm excited to watch Drake Lindsay in this offense. He's a highly touted quarterback. I used to live in the same apartment building as him. I mean, that has no effect at all, but like, you know, I'm really excited to watch the Gophers, Drake Lindsay, PJ Flex squad go at it. Am I crazy?
No, I'm very excited about Drake Lindsay and where that big old arm could take him. I just would make a suggestion to PJ Fleck, pass the ball, pass the football, pass first, not run first, pass first. If we could get like a little KOC to wander over and just whisper in his ear, throw the ball, because that's your best chance. I know they love to run, but Drake Lindsay's got the arm. That's how you're going to have the best shot to win.
That's well done. Garrett, have you ripped any Drake Lindsay tape?
I'm aware of Drake Lindsay, and there's a chance that Drake Lindsay doesn't have to move too far. Low moving costs is what we could be hoping for here. Low moving costs, you know, save everybody money. Just keep them local.
Sure thing. All right, Garrett, what's your tweet? I mean, you got this, the finale here.
Yeah, this is a tweet you mentioned earlier. This is not a picture of Alec. I know there may be some confusion. The picture of Danielle Hunter. there may have been some confusion, but that is confirmed not Alec based on what we were talking about earlier. And I just saw it and on the timeline, and I just replied with, I missed Danielle Hunter. I just, one of my favorite Vikings ever, just all around, just beast, 114 sacks. I'll say it, future Hall of Famer, should be. He'll be in the Ring of Honor someday. Awesome player, and I think he should be in Canton.
I mean, it would be so funny. My first couple of years covering the team when he was here, and I'm watching film, and I don't know much now, but I definitely didn't know a lot then. And I'm like seeing him hop and move at that side. What is this like an optical illusion type situation? But Garrett, to your point, what a phenomenal player. And I don't know if he's ever gotten his requisite due
Never.
For just how talented and productive he's been. Kyler, you'd probably agree with that.
Yeah, and I got to see the whole thing. Like, I got to Minnesota at the time where he was starting to really take off. And one thing that I did a story once on, like, Danielle Hunter, let's talk about everything that's not his freaky, scary arms. Like, and so I went to Harrison Smith and Eric Kendricks and different players and just asked them, like, describe Danielle Hunter to me without saying he's a freak, like, right? Or built in a lab or Madden player or whatever. And I found out a lot of stuff. I mean, one thing about Danielle is that those arms don't happen by just sitting around. I mean, yes, there is some DNA there that probably helped quite a bit. I don't think you and I could pump iron and look like that, But, you know, he works so, so hard at it. And the details of pass rush work so hard, cares so much, and is truly one of the nicest people that I've ever met in the NFL, which I think is one of the reasons he doesn't get this attention. If he was like out there very aggressive and podcasted and TikToked or whatever and every sack, I mean, I think that there would be a lot more celebration of Danielle Hunter, but he is just such a humble, humble person.
The most low-key thing to wrap it up is he tore his pec. And I remember sitting with him one time and him saying, like, he broke down because he couldn't even do a push-up. So the guy you just showed on your phone could not do a push-up. Not only has he responded from that torn pec injury, but he has maintained, if not built, just a level of impressive production. So I'm glad we've ended with some, like, you know, opponent Bears stuff. But then, no, that was a good, great place to end it, Garrett, on episode 5 of the Vikings Collective. A lot of quarterback conversation to start. We had to get it out of the system. It happens. Final preseason game Friday night. I will be attentive, as I'm sure you guys will, to see how this 53-man roster shakes out. But it was an awesome episode, and we'll be back next week to talk about the roster. And then guess what, guys? Football is quite soon. So for Matthew Collar of the Purple Insider, for Garrett Greenlee of Football Analysis, I'm Alec Lewis of The Athletic, and I cannot wait to talk to you guys next week.